and welcome to today's Raging Bull podcast. We occasionally like to add guest interviews from traders and experts from Raging Bull's Elite Traders Chat Room. In the Raging Bull Elite Chat Room, we hold live trading sessions with Raging Bull's traders, elite members, and our invited guests. These sessions are hosted by our Elite Chat Room host, Hitha Herzog. It's my pleasure now to introduce Hitha and one of our special guests to the Raging Bull podcast.
On this, I know this term is being you know used often and almost to a cliche, but this unprecedented day of economic information coming out here. GDP numbers just came out at 8:30, and we've been watching the markets here in this room, and what we can't seem to understand, and I'm just going to join myself in this, is that why is it that the markets are going gangbusters right now? But we had this basically these numbers that came in much more significant than what was anticipated. So we thought that the estimates were at 4%, right? Yeah. And the contraction for GDP was really at more like 4.8%.
Yeah, so you know, I think when you look at what the markets are doing, you know, potentially they're kind of looking through this number. They're saying, well, this number is the past. When we look to the future, we think things are going to get better. They're looking at economies that are reopening up. There's some news out of, I think it's Gilead, with you know some potential promising results for a potential treatment. But I think if you look at the GDP number, you reach, I think, a much more sober assessment. I think one of the things that was surprising in that the GDP contracted more than expected is that, you know, a lot of the shutdowns and a lot of the strict government restrictions really came about the second, third week of March. So really with the economy being kind of formally restricted by these shutdowns or stay-in-place orders was only probably the last 2 and 3 weeks of the month. And before that, you had a boost in activity, and we saw that in the non-durable goods of people buying stuff and, you know, hoarding stuff and stashing all this stuff. So what that means is that other economic activity really started to decline well before the shelter-in-place orders. And that means that when you remove these orders, the economy is not going to bounce back. It's still going to remain somewhat subdued. And there's actually many studies from prior to this crisis, from the WHO, IMF, World Bank, and others that look at economic effects of pandemics. And what happens is that there's a much bigger impact of people taking their own actions, call it infection avoidance actions, than actual formal impact of government mandates on the economy. So even if you were to say tomorrow, everybody can go everywhere that they want, there's a large proportion of the population that is not going to return to the level of economic activity that they were doing beforehand.
So what does this then look like for the next couple quarters? So we're seeing this contraction. Do you anticipate a contraction to continue? Or, I mean, are we now in contraction territory and we're going to see the economy continue to contract for a little bit longer? And how severe will that be?
So I think certainly for the second quarter, another quarter of contraction is, you know, pretty much locked in. Just because of the severe restriction on economic activity you saw in April. For the third quarter, we might actually see a positive quarter in terms of growth and change. But this is actually one of those instances where a lot of times when you look at economic data, they'll tell you, you know, don't look at the level of the data. You want to look at the rate of change. This is going to be an instance where we want to pay attention to the level possibly more than we want to pay attention to the rate of change. Because of the deep contraction we see in second quarter, we'll probably get a bit of a bounce back in the third quarter, but it's not going to take us back to where we were prior. And it's probably going to take several quarters or even years to get back to where we were prior, because there's real permanent damage being done to the economy. Many businesses are not going to come back. Many jobs are not going to come back. Jobs that do come back are going to be changed in many fundamental ways. Just as a simple example, right now we're doing this interview. I'm at home. You're at home. Most of the people watching us are at home. A lot of companies have discovered that, hey, we can actually be effective working from home. So that need to be in the office is going to be much reduced, which is going to affect, obviously, commercial real estate. It's also going to transportation. So there's going to be less jobs in transportation. There's going to be less jobs in food services around offices. So there are going to be permanent changes to the economy. They're going to leave it smaller, I think, for a few quarters from now.
So that is another question that I wanted to bring up with you too. I feel like there's a certain bifurcation that's happening, not just, and I cover retail. So I see this bifurcation in the retail sector of retailers that are, are ones that kind of provide these durable goods that everyone needs, these essential items that everyone has to have. And then those retailers that maybe provide product that are more aspirational, things that people, may or may not need immediately. Do you see that bifurcation happening? And you brought up commercial real estate, but also you said in the automotive industry, are there other industries that you see where you're seeing this split essentially down the middle of the industry of companies and certain corporations that fulfill this need now that we're in place at home and probably aren't going to be leaving that much? And companies that really maybe provided an aspirational product that that people thought that they needed but didn't. And I think you brought up the automotive industry. Is there anything else? I mean, for example, construction. Do you feel that maybe when it comes to new housing starts, we saw that economic data come out last, I guess it wasn't last week, it was a couple of days ago. The weeks are blending together for me, Tendai. I don't even know what day it is anymore, but we saw that Case-Shiller number come out. Where do you feel that construction and even housing is going to be a bifurcated industry?
So that's really kind of interesting that you brought up housing. For a lot of these things, it's still a little bit too early to try and figure out what's going to happen, especially with durable goods by their nature or, big things like construction and houses. These are kind of longer term products. So you can't measure kind of with the immediacy how consumers are reacting to these things, right? So for example, in housing, right now, sales are going to decline because of stay-in-place orders and also possibly because, if I was selling a house, a lot of people are pulling their houses off the market because they don't want a bunch of people walking through and touching everything, given the concern over the virus. I think longer term, we probably will see some slowdown in housing and housing starts, but it's to do with the broader change in the economy, not necessarily consumers changing their behavior relative to how they approach that product. So what do I mean when I say the broader changes in the economy? I think we're going to have elevated unemployment rates for some time to come. I think lenders have pulled back lending standards and they're going to remain cautious for some time to come. And so, kind of jumping ahead into the Fed later on today, a lot of these actions that the Fed has taken, I've been thinking about this whole situation we're in terms of three kind of connected crises. So we have the public health crisis, which morphed into an economic crisis in the real world. And when I say the real world, I mean like people actually doing stuff, being physically able to go somewhere and participate in some activity. And then there's the risk of a financial crisis morphing from this change in actual economic physical activity. And so what the Fed has been doing is they've been trying to inoculate the financial system with all these programs that they've announced. They're trying to bubble wrap it or vaccine it, to use the parlance of public health, so that when and if we have some solutions for the public health concern, which leads to economic activity start to kind of ramp back up, right, which we're seeing in some of these states that are opening up, that the financial system is in place to support those activities. So you don't want this to morph into a financial crisis, which it hasn't yet. So when you look at, something like housing, which is a very leveraged industry, you really need to keep that financial system intact in order to support housing coming out of this on the other side. But I still think you see some contraction in housing based on things like unemployment and kind of just a broader disruption in the economy.
And that's what I feel like is so different between this, I don't even want to call it a crisis yet, because I feel like we have to be, you know, sort of careful with our words, but where this situation is different.
Everybody's searching for bigger and bigger superlatives. Sorry to jump in.
I don't know what's unprecedented. Is it a crisis? But where this is very different than what happened in 2008 is that we didn't have access to credit markets. So it feels like we're a little bit more liquid and have more access to credit markets this time around. But what you are saying in terms of, you know, your expertise, that you're saying that lenders are going to be a bit more careful because the standards are basically changing and people don't have jobs. And so are they going to add like another layer onto what they deem as creditworthy now, or is it going to loosen up even more because it wasn't everyone's fault that they lost their jobs? I mean, it was really, you know, something that was out of everyone's control here.
So I think with the lending standards, so we've seen them tighten right now. And part of it is that, you know, there's kind of like less investor demand. There's like capacity issues. There's a lot of things happening in the mortgage markets. I think on the other side, you know, even if lending standards do return to where they were previously, which I think there's a decent chance that they will, just the number of people that are going to be inside that box, that credit box, is going to be less. And, you know, potentially we're going to have I think generally maybe consumers are going to be kind of more risk averse. I think, so basically, I guess what I'm trying to say is like, even if everything kind of goes perfectly in terms from now on, in terms of finding solutions to these problems that we're having, there's going to be permanent change to kind of the psyche of the consumer. And there's going to be permanent damage to the economy that's already been done. And that's going to continue to flow forwards over the next couple of years.
Got it. Okay. I have some questions here in our chat. I'm just going to just scroll up over here. Looks like Laura Cox over here says, is now a good time to refinance mortgages?
Absolutely. So this is probably the one kind of, you can play offense, right? So I feel like the past 2-3 months, everything everyone is doing, everybody's playing defense because of what this virus is doing to the economy and to people's employment prospects and their finances, et cetera. Refinancing is the one area where you can play offense. Rates are close to the lowest lows in the history of mortgage rates. So, you know, you can save thousands of dollars over the life of the loan, hundreds of dollars a month if you refi. And because rates are close to their lowest ever, almost everybody, just in terms of that rate differential, does have an opportunity to refinance. The question then becomes, you know, there are other requirements in terms of lending standards, like we just spoke about. Do you have enough equity in your house? And then also, have you had a disruption to your employment? But the best thing you can do is just look into it, talk to some lenders. You know, LendingTree, obviously, that's a business that we're in a major way. And even though lending standards are changing for different lenders, not everybody is doing the same thing. So if you go to one lender and they say, we can't help you, that doesn't mean there isn't a lender out there that can. You just kind of have to find them. So there's definitely a big refi opportunity. And it's one of the few things you can do that are offensive versus defensive in terms of your personal finances.
Got it. And then Tiffany over here is saying, how do you see emerging markets being affected by the shutdowns over the next year?
Yeah, so emerging markets, a lot of them are very dependent on trade. And obviously, we've seen a huge disruption to global trade. The other challenge in many emerging markets is they really don't have the infrastructure in order to do the kind of shelter in place orders that we've seen here in the United States. I'm from Zimbabwe. I grew up there. I came here for college. And in Zimbabwe, the country really isn't set up for people to shut down and shelter in place for weeks or even months on end. Most people kind of live day to day. People have to, you know, go out and get food and so on and so forth. I think probably the blessing in disguise in many emerging markets is that there's various theories as to why, but really the virus doesn't seem to have spread there with quite the virility that is, or to the magnitude that it has in a lot of developed nations. That's really, you know, a blessing in disguise for many of those countries which really don't have the infrastructure to respond effectively to something like
that. And Frank is asking, what is the one economic trend that you Someone is messaging me. Hold on one second. All right. Okay, there we go. I get like pop-ups of messages while in the midst of this interview. It's so funny. Okay, what's the one economic trend that you see coming out of this that you don't think is getting enough attention? Unemployment, more working from home, less consumption are all talked about a lot. Is there anything that is not intuitive that is likely to change? That's a good question.
Yeah, that's a great one. Something not intuitive that is likely to change. Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I guess, you know, you mentioned some of the obvious ones, unemployed, like working from home. I don't know, I guess maybe travel is not going to bounce back as much. I think the bigger thing that maybe is not addressed as much is I think this is probably going to increase inequality, and that's going to reduce the potential growth rate of the economy, because you're going to have even less, more like less income at the lower end of the scale, where there's a higher propensity to spend. So this is just going to exacerbate the income inequality trends that we've been seeing, and that's not great for the economy in the long run.
What about supply chain? I mean, as you know, I cover retail. I've been actually working on a huge insights right now with one of my clients, Oracle, on the way that supply chain is being handled right now. Do you think that this is going to have a real disruption to the supply chain? And as a consumer, what do consumers do? I mean, I'm reading right now that Costco is going to have a run on chicken, of all things, because of the plant that's closed down in Iowa. Do you think that this is going to have a real disruption to the supply chain, not just with things that we buy in the grocery stores like milk, cheese, chicken, other meat products, but in general?
So, you know, when I was a kid growing up, we had chickens in the backyard, and if you wanted chicken for dinner, you had to look your chicken in the eye first. So maybe that will get more
popular. Same thing in India. That's why no one eats meat in India.
I mean, in terms of the supply chain, so something like chicken and poultry, most of those supply chains are already in the US. But I think, there's been a huge disruption to global trade. And that was already on top of, last year, the past couple of years, we've been dealing with this whole trade dispute between the U.S. and China. So I think that's going to add some organic changes to trade and supply chains, in addition to some of the regulatory and kind of political challenges that supply chains are facing. So I think we will see kind of a period of this continued shift to, I guess, kind of more localized production in many countries and less globalization. But that's a pendulum that swings back and forth that will only last a certain amount of time. And then, you know, as soon as some producer is getting undercut by somebody else, they're going to say, I need to find less expensive supply. And, that will probably, that's going to pull back. But I think it's somewhat oversold the extent to which a lot of, for example, in the U.S., a lot of production can't just come back to the U.S. Just the cost structure just isn't conducive to
it. Got it. Okay. Couple more questions for you, and then I know you will have to go. It is a big day for you. Tiffany is saying, can you share your education journey and coming to LendingTree as chief economist? Tell us, please. I think I should have started out with that question, to be honest, because it's so fascinating. But please let us into the whole journey.
All right, so this is a really kind of fun question. I grew up in Zimbabwe. I went to high school there, and I actually started college there at the University of Zimbabwe. And then while we were there, we just, you know, a couple of some buddies, we heard about the SAT. So we kind of did it like, oh yeah, let's try this out. Did okay. I got a scholarship to St. Louis University in Madrid. So St. Louis University, so every school now has all these study abroad. St. Louis University was one of the first. They've had a campus in Madrid since the 50s. So I did 2 years in Madrid. Then I went to St. Louis to finish up my last year. And I actually studied engineering management, or industrial engineering, it's called at some school. So I started out as an industrial engineer and operations guy. And I worked at Capital One and Bank of America. And then at Bank of America, I made a transition to the chief investment office at Bank of America. And I didn't have an econ degree, and I started doing econ and financial stuff. So I ended up deciding to get a master's in applied economics, which I got at Hopkins in DC. I moved from Bank of America to Allied Bank to Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, a little detour from the financial world. And then I joined LendingTree almost 3 years ago now.
And that's right. You are good friends with my good friend, Stephen Diamond, who's over at Pfizer. And we talk about you. He absolutely adore you so much.
Stephen would have dressed up for this interview.
Oh, no. I need to bring him into the fold so the room can see exactly who we're talking about. This was like one of the most dapper people that you will ever meet and know. So one last question for me. We're clearly in, we're seeing this downturn with the economy. Markets are doing well. As consumers and as investors, are there three takeaways that we should just be aware of as we go into the next quarter?
I think my big thing for investors has been don't panic. Market downturns always end. Recessions always end. There's growth on the other side. The important thing is you should have a plan. So always try to have a plan before you kind of get into trouble. So have a financial plan that you're comfortable with. So for example, if you found that the market turmoil over the past couple of months has caused you a lot of heartache and a lot of knots in your stomach, maybe you don't quite have the appropriate plan. So it would be good to revisit your plan in a measured way. But don't make panicky moves to, sell stuff or, get in and out of stuff that can, get you in a lot of trouble. So that's kind of on the investing side. For consumers, a lot of it has to do with, I guess, personal finance. Investing is part of that. Watch your expenditures if you're concerned about your employment situation. Make sure you research all the different government programs out there to help both businesses and consumers. It's like $3 trillion floating around out there. Probably there's some help for you if you're in a bit of a bind. So don't despair, everybody. Let's keep our heads up and we can make it through this.
You are awesome. And that is great. Because here at Raging Bull, we can't give financial advice because I'm not a registered investment advisor. And I always tell people to talk to the registered investment advisors if they want specific advice from that. But that is a great, great set of sort of rules to live by, I guess I should say, especially as we're looking at this economy. Tendai, thank you so much for being here with us. Tendai Kefidze he's the chief economist over at LendingTree and a friend of mine. And I am so grateful that you are here with us today. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
All right. Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
Well, that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks for listening. I invite you to visit RagingBull.com/podcast. That's RagingBull.com/podcast. To discover more episodes and to learn more about people who have created, built, and lived successful lives. Also remember to subscribe to one of Raging Bull's newsletters. Join me on the next episode as we share more stories from our guests on the wisdom behind wealth and how they built their own success. Raging Bull Podcast is brought to you by RagingBull.com, helping traders succeed through education, resources, and where you can watch real traders make trades. Raging Bull, learn to trade. We'll show you how.